Welcome to the Gamers Inn. Come on in, pull up a chair next to the fire. It looks like you've had a long journey. I'm your host, Jocelyn, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Ryan. Hello, Ryan.
Well, hello there. How's it going?
Not too bad. How are things with you this week?
I almost forgot to unmute my mic.
Yeah, I was going to tell you to do that, and then I was like, nah, he's had enough practice.
Yeah, that's not true. it's been good. This week kind of went by quickly, didn't it?
It really, really did. And also, I really apologize to everyone. We're starting about 15 minutes late. I worked today, which I have not worked on a Friday for a very long time. So I got home about half an hour before the show was supposed to start. So a little bit of a rush today. But we're here. Mm-hmm. We're good to go. And yeah, so fast week.
Yes. And hasn't been a quiet week. It's been a pretty loud week.
There's been a lot of news this week. So... we will get into that right after we talk about what you've been playing. So, Ryan, what have you been playing?
I've been playing a little thing called 3DS. Boom.
It's
XL.
Red.
It's red.
At first I thought it was pink, and I was like, aren't you progressive?
There was a pink one. Not that you would need to buy a pink one, ladies or gentlemen, or I just offend everybody. So, I've been playing 3DS. Luigi's Mansion. Fire Emblem, all great titles. Beat Fire Emblem, 40 hour, no wait, I think in game it said I played 40 hours, but if you go into the stat tracker it says 80.
Oh really?
Yeah.
It must be like actual moving around game time versus mm-hmm. like pause time or something.
Well, the problem with Fire Emblem, I think we talked about it a couple months ago, so I won't like repeat what I said, but basically the game, if a character dies, they're dead forever. So me being the story nut and loving everybody equally in the game, even if they suck and they keep dying, I would restart the match. So there's 27 chapters in the game, and you can imagine that, you know, you make one slight mistake or someone gets a crit on your guy, which is triple damage, you restart. You know, there's a command button to restart on the 3DS, and I probably did that a lot, which would, explain why I've got double the time on there. the 3DS has an app tracker, I guess. It tracks, it's sort of like Steam, how Steam says, you've spent 60 hours in Skyrim.
Right.
And that counts the second you launch it and the second you close it, right?
Yeah.
So that's sort of why that was. I was surprised. To be honest, it's like playing Slash Played and WoW. It's like, really?
Well, and actually, this kind of brings up a really cool thing that I did this week, is I joined Raptor because I had never used the service before. I would see it every once in a while as like somebody doing like an auto tweet, like, you know, I've played this, that, and the other thing over the last 24 hours via Raptor. And I was like, well, I kind of thought it was like Get Glue for video games, which it kind of is.
Mm.
But instead of giving you just stickers, which is what Get Glue does.
They actually did.
I don't. Is that still a thing?
They got rid of video games and they got rid of podcasts. So like, no reason to use it anymore.
Yeah, exactly. So, anyways, with Raptor, they actually partner up with the creators of the games to offer you rewards. So.
Ooh.
I signed up, I linked my Steam account, my WoW account, and my Xbox Live account, and then it automatically downloads what your achievements are, and you get, like, for every achievement that you have, it counts as 1 hour of game time, or it actually tracks the hours that you play. So you do get some credit for stuff that you played before you even joined the service, which I thought was really cool, even though they had no way to track you, right?
Mm.
So, anyways, from all the achievements that I had in WoW and the fact that I had linked my WoW account and my Xbox Live account, I ended up getting a Horde t-shirt for my Xbox Live avatar.
What?
So I was just like, well, that's cool. Just this, like, random, basically because I signed up for the service. And the reason that I looked into it is because I got an email from Rift saying that they'd partnered with Raptor, and if you got to a certain level of... Because it tracks your hours and then gives you like a rating. So for the first 20 hours you're a noob, and then the next 20 hours, say, you're an amateur, and then after that you become Like, I think there's like hardcore and elite and pro and like all these different ranks based on how much game time or how many achievements you have. Mm-hmm. And it's based, like, it's different for every game based on like how much content there is to play and everything. So obviously a game that takes you 10 hours, they don't expect you to play 200 to get elite. But a game like WoW, it takes you a really long time. So anyways, Rift is offering the expansion and 30 days of free game time if you rack up enough hours. I think it's around 200 hours, which if you've been playing Rift for the last couple of years, then, I mean, you could, if you sign up for Raptor, then earn this expansion and game time for free.
200 hours. Well, how many days would that be?
20 days if you spend 10 hours a day playing.
Well, I mean,
but you have from now until I believe it's the end of May. It's about a month long promotion. So I just thought that was really, really cool. Like, these are actual either in game items that you can use or full on like games, expansions and titles and things that you would maybe otherwise have to spend real money on. Like, it's actually a reward system that I find interesting, as opposed to, you know, just more crap that I'm not really going to do anything with, like stickers.
Yeah, I've heard of Raptor too. Is it sort of like a sign up and leave it and forget it sort of thing, or do you have to like micromanage it?
No, it's a leave it and forget it thing. Okay. It automatically tracks once you link your accounts. So your Steam account, your Xbox Live, it has PSN, no Wii support, some PC games like WoW. WoW isn't on Steam, but it will still track your achievements from WoW.
Cool.
And then as long as you have it running, like running in the background on your PC, then it'll track whatever, like it tracks WoW. Basically any game that you run, it will track.
Oh, it's an executable on your computer.
Yes, yeah, okay. There's like a desktop app thing.
Neat.
So, yeah, it is really neat. I've been enjoying playing around with it. And so what it does as well is it'll go into Steam, and it'll go into Xbox, and it'll pull your library. And so then it'll tell you the percentage of your games that are, say, RPGs or first-person shooters. So you get a real, like, breakdown of your gaming habits, and it's a whole lot of really interesting data pulled from all these different sources to give you, like, a profile of you as a gamer. So even outside of, you know, the tracking your time and your achievements and everything else, I find it really, really interesting to see, like, I'll take a screenshot and post it on the show notes of, like, Jocelyn is a gamer. It's really interesting. I like data anyway, so I'm kind of a nerd. So I think it's a really cool service, and I wish I'd signed up for it before now, but still.
Metrics, man. They're mm-hmm. awesome. I love them too. Like, I used to love doing the slash play it in WoW. Yeah, it never bothered me. I was like, cool, 30 days of playtime over the last like 5 years.
Yeah.
But that's why I like the Xbox and PlayStation don't have anything like that. I love the way Steam does it, how I can tell, like, it's also like a value proposition too, like time equals money, friend, mm-hmm. right? So you look at Skyrim and say, oh, I put 60 hours into it. It's like, yeah, I think that's a pretty good deal.
Well, yeah, that's a dollar an hour, right, for Skyrim.
Basically. And I mean,
I found it was so funny because it was like, I can't even remember how many titles it said that I owned. But then it came up with like 70-something titles where I'm still like a noob because I haven't even played them yet. And I was just like, oh.
Maybe I don't want to link
shame.
It. Yeah, my Steam account would be like, But that would be interesting. I like the breakdown, though, telling you how many RPGs you have, because if you're in the mood for, like, we all have huge Steam libraries due to like sales libraries. You know, it's Friday, so it'd be interesting to say, like, oh, you know, I feel like an RPG, but I don't feel like digging through my Steam collection. You know,
mm-hmm. so show me cool. all the things I have on Steam that are RPGs.
Yeah, I think that's cool. And I'm sure there are a lot of them buried in there that you've installed. And, you know, I was like, oh, you know, Alpha Protocol for $2 seems like a good deal. I might play it.
Oh, so many of those.
So the Wii U and the DS or the 3DS have like sort of like a stat tracking app, which is really cool. And I'm hoping that and I know it's not like a mainstream thing. So I highly doubt Microsoft will do it, but maybe Sony. It seems like a thing Sony would do.
Mm.
It just seems like such an extra thing that a lot of people wouldn't use, but I like it. And Yeah. So I beat Fire Emblem.
Yeah, sorry, I totally went
no.
This, like, stat tracking tangent, but yeah, so Fire Emblem fault. Done.
Yeah, it's highly recommended, and at $40, if you're into strategy titles, you'll easily get your money's worth. Plus, there's a shit ton of DLC that costs way too much money. You should probably avoid that. But there are free maps that come out via Spot Pass, which basically is like a... since the game released, every 2 or 3 weeks, they would say, oh, you've unlocked a new map via Spot Pass, and it's like they unlock once you get to the end of the game, but before the final battle. And it's sort of just like extra missions. They're related to the story, unlike the DLC, which is sort of this like extra mode. So that's neat that they sort of expand upon the story for free, people. Like, no, Nintendo. See, Nintendo's not that stupid. They're giving you story content for free, then charging you up the bum or up the ass or however you want to put it for DLC. Like, I think the maps are like $2.50 a map, which is pretty crazy.
Yeah.
But yeah, Fire Emblem's great.
So what about Luigi's Mansion? Yeah. Because I've heard a lot of really interesting stuff. People seem really excited and to be having a lot of fun with this title. So I have a girl I work with said that she's got 2 or 3 days off, and she's like, I'm going to start and beat Luigi's Mansion all in one go. I went and bought a 3DS just for this title. I'm so excited.
Nice.
Like, yeah.
It's great. These are the kind of titles that appeal to a large mass, and I feel bad when someone doesn't have like that Nintendo sort of like platform, because this is those games that you need to play. And mind you, developed by a Canadian studio. I think out of BC.
Connection.
Yeah, they Next Level Games. They did the Mario Soccer titles. And the Punch Out one. Anyways, this is much better than
that's
those.
That's not really a claim to fame.
No. But this one is. It's a direct sequel to the first Luigi's Mansion. Some time has taken place since the first one. It seems like a lot. Luigi's still scared for some reason. I mean,
Luigi's always scared.
He is just
the short end of the stick a lot. So
he's so charming. He gets scared so often, and you just can't help but be like, oh, Luigi, what trouble will you get into next? You know, he's constantly being teleported and never... How come... Okay, here's a question. How come when someone gets teleported, they don't just get teleported like in Star Trek, where they show up and they're just standing still and it all worked perfectly? No. In Luigi's Mansion, when he gets teleported, he's always, like, upside down or 2 feet off the ground or lands on his ass. Like, it's just...
because he's Luigi. He can't do anything right.
I don't think it's his problem. I think it's the professor. He's a lazy... he just wants to watch Luigi get tortured, you know?
Aww.
So, I guess I should explain. The reason you're being teleported is because it's a handheld game, it's sort of split into missions. And unlike the first one, there's multiple mansions, so you have like a mansion
were there
one.
Were not multiple mansions? No, there weren't.
There's a big
sorry.
One.
I can't. It's been so long.
It has. It's been 10 years, and this is why I hope that the Wii U adds GameCube games to their virtual console, because I would buy the crap out of Luigi's Mansion, the original one, because there's really no easy way to play it anymore. I mean, my Wii is in my closet. It's packed up.
I actually have my Wii out.
See, you have
I
your Wii out.
I unpacked it last week.
You could play Luigi's Mansion. Do you own Luigi's Mansion?
I do. And I have my GameCube controllers and everything. And that's actually what I use my Wii for more than anything else, is playing GameCube titles.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Damn straight.
Yeah. Callback. Yeah, this game's so great, and same mechanics as the first one, a little more actiony, where you seem to be capturing ghosts more than you're solving puzzles, but the puzzles are there. And
I remember being chased around a room by like a possessed piano with teeth.
Yep, there are instances where things are possessed. Usually the bosses possess stuff, and you have to like battle them. And the one great thing about this is, in comparison to the first one, is the first one was sort of an expanded, like, they had their concept. Luigi's scared in a mansion, and he's got to save Mario. In this one, there's constantly new things that are popping up. Like, I was worried that because they split it up into missions, you'd be like, okay, I need you to go to this room and kill all the ghosts, then come back, and then we'll go do the next one. There are some missions like that, but most of the time your objectives are varied, and you're never doing the same thing. This one level, I'm pretty far into the game, and
careful with the spoilers.
I'm not spoiling it. It's a hard game to spoil, really. But yeah, I'm about the fourth level, and here I am thinking it's like, okay, I'm gonna go to the end. I'm gonna unlock the door, and then I'm gonna fight the boss. Then I'm gonna go to the next mansion, and it turns out like the mansion's smaller, and the boss fight is like this totally different mechanic. And like I said, they're just constantly switching things up, and
that's good.
If there's a main reason to play this game, it's to see how freaking scared Luigi is and how charming the animations are. And
aww.
He's just so...
I've got to say, yeah. The amount that I've heard lately about how much Nintendo is focusing on the 3DS, we've got all those new titles that were announced at Nintendo Direct last week. There's mm-hmm. Luigi's Mansion that everyone seems to be raving about. It's the new... new Zelda? New Zelda coming to 3DS? It's making me want to pick one up, but mm-hmm. I don't know when I would actually play it. So, I know you say that you play your 3DS all the time.
Yeah.
Do you do that, like, just sitting on your couch or, you know, because you drive to work, right? So you don't have a commute or anything.
Yeah, I don't have a commute. Actually, I really got into the 3DS on my lunch breaks last summer mm-hmm. where I just needed to get out of the office and I'd go sit on a park bench and play my 3DS for like 45 minutes. But once winter hit, I found I wasn't playing enough. But then, if you're going to get a 3DS, I was sort of like that too. It's like, oh, you know, I love Nintendo titles, but I don't have time. I'm never in the need for a portable gaming experience. Exactly. And what I would suggest, it's sort of similar to a situation with playing on an iPhone and playing on an iPad. The bigger screen sort of makes it feel like less of a portable experience. So the 3DS XL, like, oh, where's my other one? I don't have it here. But the regular 3DS is like $30 less expensive, but it's really small in comparison to the XL. And if I were to make a suggestion, definitely go for the 3DS XL because it feels... You'll want to play that more because it's less of a portable sort of system.
I never noticed how small my iPhone was until I got a 5. And it's not a huge difference. Like, it's a teeny tiny little difference on the actual size of the screen. But it just feels that much bigger. Like, when I pick up Joel's phone by accident or if I pick up my old 3DS that's sitting here in front of me now, I'm just like, I look at it and I'm like, oh my God. This is so small. How did I ever make do with this?
That's a good point. The 3DS is really small in comparison to the XL, and you definitely notice that as soon as you start playing on XL. But then again, like the first time you play an XL, you're going to get that feeling of this thing is huge. I don't know. But as soon as you start playing it, it really comes into its own size, and you probably never want to downgrade. Mm-hmm. And it's really worth it. I think they're going to have a 3DS XL bundle with Animal Crossing. Something you'd want to do.
I never really got into Animal Crossing. I don't really think that would be the title. But I mean, I'm sure if they're starting to come out with bundles, there's going to be one that's going to appeal to me. And
Smash
like
Bros.
It's very compelling. It seems like Nintendo is really focusing on the mobile market and not so much on the console. And it's disappointing for people who bought a Wii U.
Hey, I am not disappointed. This week I got my favorite game on the Wii U. It's called The Patch. Oh, I stayed up super late on Thursday to download that patch. And
Was it fun?
Oh, man. I got to tell you, watching that progress bar was the most fun I had all week. The Wii U is Nintendo does this every time. They just don't know how to. They said, we're not going to make the same mistakes we made with the 3DS. Except they're making the same mistakes they made with the 3DS. They launched it. They had no games. And they turned that ship right around. The 3DS is doing great. And they're probably going to do the same thing with the Wii U. They're going to turn it around. They're going to start pushing games out for it.
I think the problem with the Wii U is that, you know, the 3DS is almost in a class of its own, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's not that many compelling portable products out there right now. I mean, you've got a PlayStation
The Vita? Vita is the best thing to ever happen. Come on.
Sorry.
I don't have a Vita. Yeah. I actually don't know anyone
who
does.
Well, and that's the thing. I can't think of anyone I know. I know people who have 3DSs. I can't think of anyone I know that has a Vita outside of people I know who are, like, very hardcore gamers that have pretty much every system that ever comes out. But with the Wii U, if the timing follows the same sort of a cycle as the 3DS did, then you're going to find the Wii U trying to pick up speed when we're getting the release of the next gens from Sony and Microsoft. And if that's the case, I just don't think that Nintendo's going to get the, not even mind share, just like wallet share. Like, I don't have, you already have consumers that are going to have to choose between Microsoft and Sony. Mm-hmm. So if you're trying to compete with that, like, basically people are just going to choose one quote unquote next gen console, because I don't even think the Wii U should be called a next gen console. But anyways, you're going to get people trying to pick one, uh-huh. and the Wii U is just not going to come out on top in the later half of this year. Like, because, I mean, the 3DS picked up speed about a year after it came out, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're looking at the same time frame for the Wii U, then we're looking at Nintendo of this year. November of this year. So November of this year is going to be packed with other things I can spend my money on. Nintendo is just not going to cut it.
Yeah, and I mean, November is all speculation at this point. We don't know what Nintendo's doing. I mean, we can assume that Nintendo's going to have some killer apps for November. Same with Microsoft and Sony. But they're launching new hardware. And I don't know if you remember the launch of the Xbox 360, but Cameo and Perfect Dark Zero weren't essentially on par with what Nintendo will release as a first-party title. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? It's sort of like, say, like look at Nintendo's launch of the Wii U, and you look at New Super Mario Bros. U. That's their best title at launch. Mm-hmm. I don't think you're going to get any better than that on Microsoft or Sony's platforms on launch. However, that still is not going to change the fact that, you know, next year this time, I'm sure Microsoft and Sony are going to be announcing some phenomenal games for their new console. Mm-hmm. But we just don't know when stuff's coming. We don't know enough information about any of them. And
we don't know anything about anything.
That's the problem, is we don't. And I'm not saying Nintendo's going to win. They're not. They're not going to win November. They're not going to win next year.
I want them to be competitive. I want them to make gamers pause and say, huh, at least you're a viable competitor. You know, I don't expect anyone to make the decision to go with Nintendo over the other two, but man, I would really like if that was a thought in a gamer's head that they said, you know what, I'm maybe. Oh yeah, no. But just that moment of maybe. That's all I'm asking.
And we won't get that. We may never get it, but we definitely won't get it until June. We won't know until June, and my bets are on the fact that Nintendo will not live up. Like, they're scrambling. There's a reason Pikmin 3 was delayed. It's because Nintendo wants to make these games. They want to make great games, but that's the problem. Is because they want to make great games, we don't have games right now.
Yeah.
So it's sort of like a catch-22.
So what else have you been playing this week? Or should we talk about what I've been playing?
Yeah, I want to talk about this game that you've been playing.
All right, so I decided, because I pretty much finished up everything that I was going to play from March. Although, we should mention, Tomb Raider, 50% off right now. I saw you tweeted that out.
Buy it.
Was it PlayStation?
And PC.
And PC. Well, I knew definitely PC, because you can get it through Green Man Gaming and somewhere else. Was it Steam as well? Had it on sale?
I think it's just Green Man Gaming, but it's
not important.
Yeah, whatever.
Green Man Gaming has Tomb Raider for 50% off right now for PC, so go have at her. And also, Ryan found the PS3 version for 50% off as well.
Yeah, if through the PlayStation Store, and if you have a PlayStation with that much memory left on it.
Yeah, really. So anyways, yeah, everyone should go pick up Tomb Raider, because that is a really awesome March release that I totally missed out on, but everyone is absolutely raving. So I think I'll probably go pick that up. But I had, you know, Heart of the Swarm and SimCity were pretty much my big ones in March, and I kind of finished off with them. There's nothing else really coming out anytime soon that I'm super excited about, so I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go back to all the things. Why are you pouting?
There's nothing else coming out. And it's not March anymore. It's the end of April.
I know.
That's the worst part. It's like, what came out in April? I'm trying to think of what came out in April, and there's nothing.
Defiance came out in April.
I mean, games we played.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, we didn't really touch that one. But
or May. It's going to be nothing. Ugh.
I know. So I decided to go back and try to pick up some stuff that I hadn't played in a while, stuff that I was enjoying at the time, but I just got pulled away from. And in this case, it was Darksiders 2. I ended up getting most of the way through the game, I think. And it has its good bits and its bad bits. And I can't 100% remember what I said about it when I started playing it last summer. I really, really enjoy the story in that it's basically a Dark Zelda, so that really appeals to me. They changed a lot from Darksiders in that they made it much more of an RPG. There's a lot more loot, and you have an inventory to manage, and, you know, all of this kind of stuff. Like, it's way more in-depth than Darksiders was.
Mm-hmm.
But I find the things that I was really enjoying, I know that I did mention the transversal stuff where, you know, you jump up to walls and you're, like, climbing across things and then you do, like, this, like, wall grab and then you flip over beams and stuff and it makes you feel like a real badass.
Yeah, that's how I get to work.
Yeah, it's like parkour, but in Darksiders,
because you're,
like,
death
and stuff.
Yeah, but I don't yell parkour as I'm doing that. It's lame.
No. But anyway, so... The thing that I really enjoyed last summer after playing for a couple of hours, after sitting down and playing for 2 days straight, man, is it annoying. It's everywhere.
Wait, like, traversal?
Everywhere. Oh, okay. And so I was just like, it's also really, like, I'm finding it difficult, and I don't know if it's me or the level design or whatever, but I'm finding that more often than not now, and I mean, I got a lot better at it than I was right at the beginning, but at the beginning, it was like 1, 2, 3 beams, and then that was it, you know, or like scramble across something and flip over something else, and then you're done. But now there's these big, huge, long sequences, and I'm finding that it's making me, like, I'll do like a slide across the wall, when, like, I'll go sideways when I want to go up, or, you know, like, there's all of these kind of weird camera angles and things that make me jump ways that I don't want to.
Weird.
And I think if you look in the stats, and we're back to stats of shame, if you look in the stats, it tells you how many times you died, and then it breaks it down into enemy deaths and environment deaths.
Mm-hmm.
And I died like 42 times, and 4 of those were to enemies, and all the rest were to the environment. All like jumping and falling in lava or, you know, whatever. And it just, it's all these weird camera angles that make the game so difficult. And not difficult in the, like, I don't know how to solve the puzzle. Difficult in the way where I'm just like, I know how to solve the puzzle. I've tried to do it 3 times now. But you have to be standing in just the right spot.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the reason I stopped playing last summer was that I got to a point, I can't remember, I think it might have been in the Lost Temple in the Forge Lands. I can't remember exactly where I got, exactly what the name of the place was that I got stuck. But you basically come into this room, there's this big chasm with a construct on the other side that you have to ride around. And so you basically have to transverse across. Then you have to jump on the construct, get to this one little brick in the floor that's slightly further ahead than all the other bricks, and then punch down this wall thing. And if you stand anywhere other than that one little brick, your weapon doesn't reach far enough.
Hmm.
And I'm just like, and it took me forever to figure it out because I had tried doing that, but I wasn't standing right in the right spot. And there are lots of, you have to be just in the right spot parts of this game, and it's really frustrating because it's just like, I know exactly what you want me to do right now, but for whatever reason I can't do it. And you try it like all different camera angles, and, you know, like, I'll move a little bit ahead and a little bit ahead and push the same button that I've been pushing for the last 5 minutes, and then finally, you know, it catches, or you're just close enough, or, you know, whatever. And I'm just like, oh my god, so frustrating.
Did you beat it?
No, I haven't beaten it yet. I played for a couple days, and there's a lot of content. I thought I was getting to the end, because you go through the Forge Lands, and you play through 5 or 6 different dungeons, and then you get to the Tree of Life, and there's this big, huge boss battle. And then once you get to the Tree of Life, it actually opens up a whole other world. So it's almost the same sort of feeling as Ocarina of Time, where you're going through as a kid, you get the 3 stones, and then you have this big confrontation, and then all of a sudden you grow up and there's more. You know, it's that same sort of whoa feeling that you get the first time through Ocarina of Time.
Oh.
Which, I mean, sorry guys, total spoilers.
Well, I mean, that's the first 10 hours of the game. It's not a big deal.
Well, yeah, that's true.
Also, it's over 10 years old. Yeah. So, did you start over when you went back to it? This is always something I find interesting when someone drops a game and comes back to it. You didn't.
But okay. I totally should have, because the problem that I ended up having is I couldn't remember why I was doing things or where I was going. So they just kept talking about the tree, how I had to get to the tree. And it wasn't until I was already at the tree, through the tree, and on the other side talking to some dude, and then Death was like, I thought getting to the tree would mean this. And I was like, oh,
the tree.
The tree, right.
Guys, why didn't you say so earlier? The tree. Ah, what's up? You do your secret handshake.
Exactly.
That's interesting. I want to get back into Darksiders 2. It is the perfect time to get back into games.
It definitely is, because like we were saying, there's a big stretch of time now. Mm-hmm. So yeah, like I said, it's interesting and it's fun, and I'm gonna play it all the way through, but I probably won't play it more than once. I mean, we have some news in Quickfire, which is very exciting, is that they're actually gonna make the Darksiders 3, so I'm super excited about that.
At some
because
point.
I was so upset and disappointed. Like, I mean, obviously I don't know how Darksiders 2 ends yet, but I know that the franchise was always planned to be multiple titles. You know, Darksiders 1 did so well, so they were going to do 2 with Death and 3 with Strife and 4 with, what's the other one? I can't remember. We always have this conversation.
Pestilence? Or is that Strife?
I don't remember. Anyways, the fourth horseman, whoever that happens to be.
There's a chick horseman, and then there's
Strife.
Another. Okay, so not the chick.
Not the chick. And not War or Death.
Yeah.
The other one. The other guy. But there was this whole big... Oh, Famine?
Famine. He's really hungry, guys. Just get him to the end of the game to White Castle.
Like, wrong story.
Yeah. So, Death and Strife go to White Castle.
Oh, God.
Or no, wait. Death and Famine. I keep screwing it up.
Anyways, so Darksiders 2, yay, we'll probably have it done by next week, and then my pile of shame will get a little bit smaller.
Piles, if I've learned anything, piles of shame never get smaller.
That's true.
No matter what they contain.
Oh, one other thing that I wanted to talk about before we move on to Quickfire News. Ooh. Is in Darksiders 2, the other thing I really don't like is the combat is totally just don't get hit.
That right?
is any kind of like big bad guy or boss battle, you just have to not get hit. It's a really, like, once you figure that out, it makes the game almost too easy.
Oh, not but get hit.
Really, what did you think I said?
No, I'm just making fun of the game. Like, that just seems like poor design. Like, that's how you fail. You just don't get hit. That's like the easiest, like, suggestion ever.
Well, it's the thing, it's like you're supposed to be like the horseman, this big powerful dude, except that like you do like 20 damage to the guy, he hits you and he does 200, and you have like 250 health. So you just, these boss battles are so long and drawn out because you just have to keep running around the room and like run in, smack, and then run in, smack. You know, and it's just like, man, does it get annoying.
So, basically, when you keep dying at a boss battle, on the loading screen, it says, hey, you know what? Try not getting hit.
Try not getting hit.
Because, yeah. You know...
At least it doesn't offer to, like, lower your difficulty level. Are you sure you don't want to switch to normal?
You seem to be sucking an awful lot. How about you take it down to easy, chump?
I hate when games do that.
We talked about that last week, didn't we? God of War?
I think so, yeah. I don't know. Sometimes I tune you out, so.
Sometimes I tune myself out, Jocelyn.
Oh, so Ryan and I really appreciate the continued support of our show, along with the support of our sponsor, Doghouse Systems. Use the code TheGamersIn to double your RAM when you purchase a new gaming rig. 4 becomes 8, 8 becomes 16, but 16 does not become 32, because that would be crazy. Head on over to doghousesystems.com and get your order on. Which brings us to Quickfire News.
Ratchet & Clank, coming to a theater near you. One of the best parts about the series is the humor and awesome characters. And finally, we can experience all those elements without that pesky gameplay getting in the way. Mind you, the gameplay in Ratchet & Clank was super fun. The film is being produced by Rainmaker Entertainment, the Canadian studio, another Canadian connection, behind Reboot, the animated... Do you ever watch Reboot, Jocelyn?
I don't think so.
Oh, I was kind of hoping for a stronger reaction there. and will be released to theaters in 2015. A teaser trailer for the film is available and will give those unfamiliar with the series an idea of what to expect.
The XCOM first-person shooter has been revealed. It has been retooled as a third-person tactical shooter developed by the team that made Bioshock 2, which I am also almost done. It's called The Bureau, XCOM Declassified. The press release notes that paramount to repelling the outside threat is the Bureau's ability to cover up the enemy's existence in order to prevent worldwide panic. It's very similar to managing regions' panic levels in XCOM Enemy Unknown. The announcement trailer will be in the show notes, and the game will be available August 20th, 2013 for the Xbox 360, PS3, and PC. Still no love for the Wii U.
What you gonna do? Darksiders and other THQ properties find a new home. We now have the results for the second round of the auction for THQ properties. First off, 505 Games acquired the Drawn to Life titles for $300,000. Second, Gearbox Software nabbed the Homeworld series for $1.35 million and has already announced plans to preserve and assemble the purest form of the original games, Homeworld 1 and 2, with the intent of making them accessible on today's leading digital platforms. Finally, with a bid of $4.9 million, Swedish publisher Nordic Games Licensing AB, or AB, walks away with everything else. Alongside Darksiders, Red Faction, and MX vs. ATV, they also picked up 38 owned titles and 36 licensed titles. And Nordic is already making news with talk of the Darksiders series being brought back to life, even going as far to say they would like to get in contact with Crytek USA, which was formed by ex-Vigil devs, about making Darksiders 3.
We have some EA layoffs. With the start of the new fiscal year, EA is laying off approximately 10% of their workforce. Rumors are circulating that the EA Partners Program has been shut down. This is the division of EA responsible for signing up outside studios to make games for EA. Large cuts were also made earlier in the year, both to the mobile division and the Montreal studio. The internal studios responsible for the upcoming Battlefield 4 and Dragon Age 3 do not seem to have been affected.
The Miiverse is now available outside the Wii U. One of the most interesting features for the Wii U is the Miiverse, and now those without a Wii U can get a taste. Available in a beta form at miiverse.nintendo.net, Nintendo Network users can log in to browse all Miiverse communities, as well as, yeah, and comment on posts. The beta site works great.
Wait.
I'm just going to skim over the, yeah. It's basically like. It's like. They just call it yeah with an exclamation point and a plus on the left. Yeah, it's like really just Facebook Nintendo. License like from Facebook and be done with it. It wouldn't surprise me if they had to license that. the beta site works great on PCs and is fully optimized for mobile phones. However, currently the only way to get a Nintendo Network ID is to own a Wii U. But for those still interested, you can view popular Miiverse communities like The Year of Luigi and others without logging in. Alongside this news, Nintendo also announced Miiverse functionality would be coming to 3DS later this year.
I'm sorry, I just have to say this because the chat room is giving us a throwback to last week.
You're not allowed to read the chat room.
You have been crowned Her Majesty Murphy the First. The queen of the Miiverse.
Does that mean I'm rich? Thank you, chat realm. I don't mind dressing up as a queen if it means I'm rich.
You're rich in the Miiverse. Does that count for anything?
I'm just rolling in yas, Jocelyn.
Valve launches a new subscription plan service. So I was totally excited about this at first, thinking maybe Steam was turning into Netflix, but for games. Turns out, nope. Misleading headlines. What Steam is rolling out is the ability to sign up and manage your subscriptions to games through Steam instead of having to use third-party software or a website. The launch title for this service is Darkfall Unholy Wars, which I've never heard of, but additional subscription-based games will follow in the near future. Which brings us to our topic of the week, which is how relevant is E3? This is brought on mostly by the news that, well, Nintendo seems to have been either... I have been reading a whole bunch of conflicting news stories, or Nintendo is flip-flopping all over the place, but I have seen things saying that Nintendo is not going to be at E3, and then I saw other updates saying that Nintendo is not going to be at E3, but they are going to hold all their own events, like Nintendo Direct, and then I saw that they're going to be at E3, but they are not going to do a big, huge press conference keynote type thing. Instead, they are going to focus on smaller presentations to smaller people. So, Ryan, what the hell is Nintendo doing?
Okay, this is a classic situation of, oh my god, the house is on fire. Everybody write down and post on the internet that the house is on fire. Like, Nintendo...
Post on the internet?
It's
way out of hand.
It's a new social network that I'm inventing. You're welcome to be on the network. It's where yes. It's called Ploster. And how you post is... No, okay. Yeah, Nintendo isn't doing a big, giant, as I described it on Twitter, what the fuck explosions keynote.
Yeah.
And
they don't have anything big enough for a keynote, I don't think.
Okay. Come on. A new Mario, a new Smash Brothers, a new Mario Kart isn't big enough? What do you want from these people? Do you want them to release a solid gold 3DS that costs one penny?
I want them to stop sucking.
We really need to have an episode where you just describe how they need to stop sucking. We'll email it to Fidgy Fizame, whatever his name is. It's not Fidgy, it's Reggie. Anyways, that's what I'm saying. New Zelda. Yeah, okay, well, of course. Everybody wants New Zelda every year. Can't be. Okay.
Anyways.
They're not doing a big keynote.
No keynote.
Not no keynote. Or, well, okay. Even I'm confused as to what they're doing. As far as I know, they still have the same venue booked, the Nokia Theater, where they do the Oscars or something. So they still have that big venue booked, but it's going to be a more low-key event where they invite members of the press to check out their software hands-on. Not one of these big, like, and here's blah, blah, blah to come talk about blah, 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 you know?
Right.
It's just going to be about the games and not about... You know, having these crazy, stupid antics to show off. You know, I don't want to watch some dude sit on stage and pretend to play drums. Like, Nintendo's notorious for having these awful keynotes where they do the most stupid things. So I think this is probably the smartest thing they've ever done, because now they can just say, no, we're not going to have someone flailing up on stage. We're going to get you up here to flail on stage.
Well, and that's true. I mean... If it works out, if they get enough people to actually come to their events while everyone else is having big keynote presentations, then...
See, I think that's another misconception, is that people think because Nintendo's doing something different that other people are going to take their place. I mean, Nintendo's still got the same slot, the same time frame. People are still going to go to this event because it's still E3.
Very true.
I mean, there are some portions... Like, for example, Nintendo has these developer roundhouse table, not a roundhouse kick, a roundhouse table, where they have like Shigeru Miyamoto and his translator and a bunch of other devs sort of sit at a table and have the press there to just kind of talk about games some more. And I think they're going to do that instead of having this big keynote. So they've already been doing these sort of behind closed doors meetings.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't claim to know everything about what Nintendo's doing. I'm just offering my perspective, and I could be completely wrong. You know, E3 could be a shit show for them. I don't know.
I thought it was a complete and utter mistake when I first read about them just skipping E3 completely.
Well, yeah, that would be a mistake.
I was just like, oh my god, Nintendo, what are you doing in favor of having your own presentations? Like, it seems like everyone is moving towards that, you know, like wanting to be just like Apple and saying, you know, like, we're going to have our own events. You know, we saw it with PlayStation. Apparently, like, everyone is expecting Microsoft to do their big announcement on the 21st of May, launching their new console. Mm-hmm. And that's, like, 21st of May is only a few weeks before E3. And then, you know, we've got Nintendo, who at the time I thought was pulling out completely to in favor of, you know, doing these Nintendo-hosted announcements, just like Apple. And I'm like, you know, once everyone starts being just like Apple, then everyone's going to be the same and you're not going to stand out anymore. And I don't think that these companies have things, or, well, Nintendo specifically, have enough to just rely on standalone stuff. Like, you have to have the industry's attention on you because it's E3.
Right.
You can't just, you know, like, I mean, Nintendo Direct was almost an afterthought last week. Like, nobody was really paying attention. Any news articles I saw written about it were, like, I know we talked about it, but a lot of news articles were just like, here are the bullet points of what they announced. Whatever. You know, like, nothing big.
Yeah.
But if those announcements were made at E3, everyone is there, everyone is writing articles, they're comparing all the different companies and what's going on. And if you don't have anything big to announce, then I think you're missing out on potential in-depth press opportunities and, you know, the chance to get your message out there. So, I don't know. I think if Nintendo were to, like, what I thought they were going to do, actually skip it, that would be a huge mistake. And then it seems, you know, their smaller stuff, getting people hands-on with their games, I think, is a good idea. I really hope it works out for them. But, I mean, I can't believe that Xbox is unveiling their console a couple weeks beforehand. Like, why not unveil it at E3? Like, what do you think about Microsoft's choice there?
It's not a surprise. I mean, I remember when I was in high school and the Xbox 360 was being announced, I stayed up till midnight to watch it be broadcast on CTV. And it was actually broadcast on MTV, but CTV had picked it up. Mm-hmm. And you got to see, like, this the first next gen console on TV. I can't believe I don't have to wait until E3. I mean, a keynote is an hour, and why not get, when it really comes down to it, the hardware and some teaser trailers isn't the meaty, like, stuff you want to, like, sink your teeth into. The stuff you want to sink your teeth through are gameplay demos, extended trailers, hands-on stuff. So I think getting the details out there early and sort of being like, it's going to have a 2.6 gigahertz parallel floppy jigger, you know, and 8 gigs of RAM, PC
look
talk.
Look at you with your techie talk.
Yeah, you should look that one up. That's a doozy. You know what I mean? Like, getting that out of the way and sort of saying, like, this is what the Xbox is built on.
These are the specs.
Yeah. Here,
you know, like, ooh and ah over our hardware, and then pay attention to our software come E3. So if they're not going to announce the actual console and the hardware, do you think that they're going to look more into, you know, what the new dashboard's going to look like, or the integration with Windows 8, or are they going to launch all their games? Or, like, what do you think that we're going to get at E3 then in place of a console launch?
I think at E3 we're going to see, and they've actually gone on record saying that E3 is going to be basically, here's the launch lineup for the next Xbox. This is what you can expect to play. Companies are using launch window more loosely now, so I think they're going to be like, here's what you're getting, launch window, and then we'll probably get launch titles, like, closer, like, September-ish. Because, I mean, they don't want to show their hand, or they're just lazy and they haven't picked out whether they want to launch it at launch. I don't know. But I think it makes sense.
We'll probably get Halo 2 redone for the 720. Ooh. That's my prediction. That will be a launch title.
See, I don't want...
Well, redone like Combat Evolved was.
Yeah,
10th anniversary, all updated graphics, new multiplayer servers, all that kind of stuff.
It seems like what I'm about to say, you're welcome to say, just let me say it, and then afterwards you can say, Ryan, you play Nintendo games, they do this all the time, and now you're calling bullshit on Microsoft. But, like, I don't know if I want to buy a 720 for a remade Halo 2. Does that make me a bad person?
No, and I'm not saying that that's going to be the only thing or that's going to be a huge selling point. I'm just saying that I fully expect there to be a Halo 2 remastered version, not remade, remastered. Yeah. Halo 2 as a launch title on the 720.
I think that would be interesting. And
they might even do, maybe they'll do a Halo 2 bundle.
I
you know how gamers like their bundles.
We bundles, man. That's how we roll. Yeah, Halo 2 would be interesting. I mean, we're certainly not going to see Halo 5, which is unfortunate, because they just started working on that. But there's rumors out there that we're going to see like a title from Rare that isn't like Avatar Sports or whatever. So that would be interesting. I mean, everyone's probably thinking like, oh my God, I hope they do another Viva Pinata or Banjo-Kazooie. But man, if they launch with Banjo-Kazooie, I'd be there day one. Not going to lie.
Yeah, I still, I mean, yeah, we'll have to see what happens with the whole Xbox unveiling, but that will be about a month from now. So, also not going to be at E3 this year is 2K.
Yeah, so the guys behind, well, the guys behind BioShock Infinite, but you mentioned the XCOM game coming out in August. They also do the new Civ 5 expansion.
Yeah.
I think they're sort of just in this limbo where
they didn't really seem to have anything big.
Yeah.
They had a sport game, I can't remember, but it was 2K14 something.
Yeah, probably hockey.
Which at that point, why don't you just say 2014? Anyways.
I don't know. Because it's 2K Sports, man. That's why.
Yeah, I guess. Still.
I don't know. I think 2K is just, there's, for every publisher that's publicly saying like, we're not going to be at E3 this year, Ubisoft's like, great, om nom nom space.
Yeah, you know? Very true. Which is another thing that I was reading while I was on the bus on the way home today, is that they're still trying to chase THQ for the almost $200,000 that they owe them for space at E3 for a booth. And I was just like, holy crap, that's a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have to be really, really big to rent that teeny tiny of a little bit of a space for 2 days or whatever.
There are benefits to downsizing at E3 for sure. But for a company that's doing really well, like that kind of money is almost like, meh, you know, but for THQ, it was sort of like it's like, we got to make this work. So we got to have a space at E3. That's sort of like some people's mentalities, I guess.
Yeah. Where I was going to go with that is that for, let's just round it to 200K, for that kind of money, is it really reflective of the industry now? Because, I mean, there's been a huge rise in mobile gaming. There's been, you know, a huge push towards indie titles. And if you are a mobile title creator, developer, or publisher, if you are a indie person especially, you don't have $200,000 to drop on a space at E3. So does E3 still reflect what's going on in the industry?
I guess not. I mean, you kind of need a publisher to be there, or you go to PAX, right?
Right.
I'm sure there are like designated areas at E3, like, you know, this.
Well, that's true. Obviously, THQ would be looking for prime E3 real estate. So,
well, what I mean, there might be like an indie section. I don't want to make it sound like charity, but. I mean, I love indie titles, and I know they run on small budgets, and it's a lot easier for them to afford PAX. But, you know, maybe E3, I don't know, maybe they have like an indie corner or something. I think they actually do, but I don't know. I think it's too big, and we've had this issue before. Like, I don't know how long you've been paying attention to E3. I mean, it's been around since 95, and actually in 2007 it was almost. It was almost shut down. They almost didn't do an E3 in 2007, and they sort of announced that they were downsizing and making it a closed industry event, only inviting major press. You know, they still had the conferences, but they were a little more low key, and it was spread across an area in LA as rather than being in one central area,
in one location. Yeah.
The reason they downsized is because people were complaining, like the exhibitors, like, it's cost too much money, it's not worth the time. And then 2 years later, they went back to this model because people were complaining it wasn't worth it, you know? So it's like, you can't make these people happy. But is this another, sort of is it just the ebb and flow of E3? Is it going to, you know, downsize again and then come back up? Or,
well, I don't necessarily think there's anything wrong with the format, because I mean, you know, like, it's having everybody together in one space is always a positive thing. I think it's good for the fans, it's good for the competitive nature of the gaming industry. I think just all of that is just breeds better games and better products for the consumer. So I think that this whole being in one place thing is a good model, but maybe they do need to shrink it down a little again, you know. Well, who knows? But
the point of a conference is it's not for the customers, it's for the media, right? Like,
right,
it's sort of a chain. Like, the companies go to E3 for the media, and then the media sort of does them a favor by saying, oh, we're going to talk about this, and then we're sort of the byproduct. We get that information.
Oh yeah, no, like when I say customer in this case, yeah, I mean them, but the people attending the con for, you know, whatever reason.
But most of the people complaining about E3 are us, right? Not like you talk to anybody who covers E3, like seriously, like just go, is in the what they call the war room for 2 days, and they fucking hate E3. They hate it because they're there for 2 days straight. You know, there's certain points that they love, but like it's exhausting and it takes a lot out of you. And I mean, I think that's where, you know, you kind of have to look at it and say, like, is it worth it? I think it's worth it. I mean, it's just, it needs to be, you need to appeal to the big three and also the big publishers as well.
Mm-hmm. Very true. So I think that pretty much brings us to the end of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Did we get any entries for our XCOM giveaway? I forgot to ask you before the show.
I was just going to give it out in the chat room, but I think the two people that are in the chat room last week said they owned it. So you know what we'll do is
maybe we'll throw it out on Twitter.
Yeah.
So, why don't you go and follow us on Twitter? You can find me, Jocelyn, at GIS Gamer. You can find Ryan at R. Murphy. And don't forget to follow the show at The Gamers Inn. You can also find us on Facebook and Google+. Don't forget to leave us an iTunes review, as it's the best way for our show to reach new listeners. You can also visit us on the web at gamersinpodcast.com or email the show at info@gamersinpodcast.com. We are on Amove TV, along with other fabulous podcasts, including StarCast, Campaign Roundtable, Biggest Fan, and This Week in Blizz. So before we go, I just want to give a quick shout-out and thank you to my brother Greg for creating our awesome music. You can find him on Twitter at SoundsInfluence. I'd also like to thank Joel Duggan of StarCross Online, who drew our Twitter avatars and created our logo. You can find him on Twitter at Joel Duggan or read his comic at StarCrossOnline.com. So thanks for staying at the Gamers Inn, and remember to tune in next week! Okay, stop talking to me now, because I have to write this last quick part news story. Quiet you.
Everyone just wants me to stop talking. Fine, I'll mute my mouth. My mouth?
Yes, mute your mouth. You can't see me right now, but I just gave you the finger.
Yeah, you should look at the GIF I put in Skype.
I am. What is happening?